Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal Brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to this series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast.
Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.4, Come One, Come All, where we are discussing the book Johannes Cabal, The Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I am joined by Amber.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hello.
Chapter 4. Cabal begins his adventure with Horst at the helm. The carnival is set up for the first time, with some unexpected hiccups. Johannes himself takes on the role as barker for the House of Medical Monstrosity and entices the crowd. So chapter 4, in which Cabal applies himself with mixed results.
Always great titles.
Yes.
I really appreciate the titles in this. Yeah, no, this was actually one of my favorite chapters. In fact, this and I would say the introduction of Arthur Trubshaw and all the bureaucracy were the two sort of highlights that really caught my attention when I first started reading this book. So I love the Barker chapter. So I'm excited that we get to review this one.
These are the hooks.
Right?
The hooks that get you really in there.
Right?
I really, really love carnivals and circuses. My absolute favorite book in the world is The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern. And there's a million and one other circus books on my bookshelf. So, like, reading this book in particular, which is about a dark circus, every single time I'm just thrown into all these other books and I'm having so much fun with it all. I'm like, yes, yes, yes.
Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely a fun theme.
So the chapter begins with Cabal at his desk and Horst in his trunk.
They're such weirdos. I was thinking about it earlier. Like, if you've got one of those beds that, like, is up against the wall and then it folds down into a bed.
Is that a trundle bed?
I don't know. Maybe.
What?
Murphy bed?
Murphy bed. You're right.
Either way. I was like, since, you know, one is up in the daytime, one is up at night, I was like, you just have, like, a coffin strap to the underside, right? I was like, it's up, it's a coffin. It's down, it's a bed. It's up, it's a coffin. It's down, it's a bed.
Jess is already planning the engineer and design in her head. You're a lot like Cabal in that way.
I was thinking, I was like, the easiest roommates in the world is a vampire and a non-vampire, because, like, true. You're never in each other's way.
Yeah, does the night shift?
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. And they are very, very different. Like, I really like this quote from the start. Horst's effortless charisma had always galled Cabal deeply. And the discovery that he even made a fetching cadaver once he'd had a chance to clean himself up a bit was almost an insult. So, yeah, now they're on the train and headed to their first destination as the official Cabal Brothers Carnival.
Yeah, we have a quick Beowulf reference. The black train surged into a darkening horizon. Now and then its steam whistle screamed, a lost and lonely sound in the undertone of shuddering horror and menace, like Grendel calling for its mother. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of fun, that little imagery for the steam whistle itself just added a little bit of extra character by throwing that in. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I like how petulant little brother Johannes is too in that. And he's like, everyone liked my older brother and I had to work hard for anyone to notice me. Yeah. And I'm like, shut up. You're such a baby.
Wait, are you an older sister?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
there
yeah.
you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and we also re-meet Dennis and Denzel.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
There's a really fun introspective moment that Denzel has, like, regarding his death and his taste for meat. But it just gets funnier.
Denzel thought in a detached way of the fairly dead. It was pretty close to the way he'd thought before Cabal had murdered him, so the adjustment had been easy. Like, just the... get a little insight into, you know, at least Denzel's mind or lack thereof.
The author and or narrator never misses a chance to insult anyone. And I really appreciate
and he's
it.
He's such a pro at it,
it's
though.
It's so good. It's just such like, it pro. Doesn't matter who it is, what's happening. He always takes the shot.
Totally. And yet at the same time, it's like everything seems very couched in sort of this, you know, almost Victorian sensibility,
hoity-toity,
right?
Yeah.
Like, there was one point where, what was it? He says, yeah, Denzel starts thinking of meat and food only to realize that he himself is on fire and slowly cooking his forearm. And the quote was, as it was, Denzel said his first word since this change of lifestyle. It wasn't a nice word. Like, you know, it's the same with the insults. He uses sort of like obfuscation and like really flowery ways to insult people and at the same time won't utter a curse.
The funny thing is that like when I was, I think it was actually in the next chapter that I really had these ideas, but a lot of the way that JLH writes his stories is not the way that I would generally enjoy a book. I normally would not be happy with the writing style and I would think that it's a little bit like juvenile. Like it's always like that show don't tell or it's like too much of like there gets to be a point when he like, with the little boy in Johannes, and he's like, do this, no, not right there, no, step aside, do this, where, like, I find in a lot of short, or in a lot of stories by more self-published authors to a degree where they haven't had the same level of critique or editing normally, where you find that, like, they're trying to make their book more relatable, so they add in, like, real-life misspeach. But I find in, like, more successful books, they don't have that sort of thing because they just want to get to the point and they skip over the no, I can't remember the word, sort of like conversation, you know? But I find in like JLH's books, he does do that, but I actually enjoy it in this world. I know I spoke around that it's hard to describe exactly what I mean, but I find that he adds a lot more descriptions that I don't normally prefer, but that really work with this book. That makes sense? It's like...
Not really. We still love you.
We'll get there. There'll be more concrete examples in the next chapter. But I was just like, really, like, there was just sometimes he would describe something that I was like, why not just do it? Why are you describing it? That I would normally have. But in this book, I'm like, it's just, it all fits in with the theme so much.
See, and I wonder if that's not, to a certain degree, like a cultural divide as well. Like, I find that a lot of North American writing to be very, like, to the point, get to the action, do it, right? And I don't know if this is what you're sort of getting at. But, like, in terms of a lot of sort of the classic British writing is more flowery, more eloquent, more dancing around the issue, perhaps?
Potentially, yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see as we get there more so.
Stay tuned for our next podcast or the next episode where Jess actually begins to make
this
sense.
Out. Yeah. We hope, maybe. That seems like a big promise. By the time this episode is published, I'll maybe be able to explain myself.
I will know what I'm trying to say. If any of our listeners know what Jess is trying to say, please reply in a comment.
Hello?
I'm just watching this divulge. This is great.
Head snapping back and forth.
And this is also that where we sort of get more of the introduction, like we're talking about Denzel sort of frying his arm off, which for me was a hilarious point as well. But here we see Cabal is watching the things that would pass for people in a bad light and things of more reliable description. Here's where we get sort of first glimpse of the odd menagerie of the employed or the newly created that are at the carnival.
We also learn that Horst has in the past 8 days taken over the building of the carnival and planning. And it's very clear with the presentation of Layla the Latex Lady versus Marco the Molting Man that Cabal has no connection of what the common man would really want. But Horst, despite being the non-human vampire, has a very keen understanding of humanity.
Absolutely.
So it's great juxtaposition of the two characters. So, but their humanity versus inhumanity.
I find it funny when we do meet Marco the Molting Man versus Layla the Latex Lady. Cabal initially questions Horst's judgment, as you were saying. And the point, Marco's only abilities are to bung up plug holes and make himself unpopular in furniture showrooms. Yeah. Layla, on the other hand, is, people just like that sort of thing. Trust me. So yeah, he definitely shows what people want. And I think it's an interesting counterpoint to sort of his brother's more sexless sort of existence.
Right. Yeah. He is sort of just
asexual.
Has blinders on, for that.
Yeah. Focused on his studies. So yeah, there is definitely a love-hate relationship between the brothers.
They're quite different. Like, they're quite different.
So Merton Pembersley Newtown is the first port of call. And the first interaction is with a very stubborn station master.
Yeah, the station master refuses to allow Cabal to park the train. Cabal knew that he was dealing with the kind of official that he always lost his temper with. He lost his temper.
Again, that understated humor. Like, he did lose his temper. I feel like I can relate to that with Cabal. So, yeah. And Cabal attempts a bribe with no luck, but he does note the magazine in the drawer that the station master attempts to hide. And thus, Cabal asks Bones to send Layla the Latex Lady over to visit the station master.
And begins to immediately unload the carnival.
Pretty sure this approach will work.
This is just surefire.
Right. No problem. That's another fun thing about listening to the audiobook is that, at least for me, when I'm reading, I can't help but always let my eyes jump ahead by a couple sentences, and then I come back, and then I jump ahead a little, and then I come back. Whereas in the audiobook, you can't do that, obviously. So there's a lot more, like, laugh-out-loud moments when it hits me, and I'm like, ah, okay, all right. Non-stop, like, every single time. It's just like, hey. Because for me, I haven't read this book in, like, coming up on a decade now or something like that, so it's all brand new to me. So I'm always just like, ah.
Oh, there's so many ready. Funny moments, too. It's just rapid-fire.
Yeah, it is. It's like, as soon as you finish chuckling at one line, the next one has already come and hit you.
Yeah. Well, and I think this will be, what, the third time now that I'm reading this or listening to it on audiobook. And yeah, I'm still having those moments.
Mm-hmm. You find a little bit more each time you read it, too.
True, yeah.
Totally. And we meet the grumpy farmer who complains to Cabal. And Cabal's solution, offer a percentage of money and just sign the contract. So
I did really have to laugh at that again. More funny things to laugh at. Cabal listened to him attentively. Or more accurately, he watched him attentively. The farmer had an interesting supraorbital ridge of a type that wasn't common in humans, quite unconsciously. Cabal started making a sketch of it while the farmer stormed. It's like, Neanderthal, perhaps?
I think that's a subtler way of saying it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
maybe it's that subtlety you're talking about. Am I wrong?
No? This isn't. Okay. This isn't it.
Okay.
But I do like that is victim one.
Yes, absolutely.
And 99 to go.
And as he's reviewing the paperwork, I like this. Cabal affected disinterest, but was glad Arthur Trubshaw had discovered the illegible delights of 4-point bold italic copper plate. This was one of those laugh out loud moments for me where I was just like, oh my God. As someone who has a hard time reading 10-point font on a good day, it's that, you know, and Arthur Trubshaw's bureaucratic handling of everything just made it even more tedious and
so did Cabal learn from Arthur Trubshaw, or did Arthur Trubshaw be the one who printed up these contracts for Cabal to use?
I think they were pre-printed, weren't they? Am I wrong?
Were they?
I think so. That's the impression that I get.
Okay, so Arthur Trubshaw. Good job.
Good job.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, we deliberately don't need to read the fine print.
Yeah. Although the farmer does read, he's like, what's this damn knee part? and Cabal just like sloughs it off.
Just some anachronistic legal term, probably left over from medieval common law. Drink. We see the classical magician's trick of like, oh, never mind what's behind the curtain. Would you like a drink? Have a seat.
Yeah. Redirection.
Yeah, redirect.
And so And it's so funny how he says, like, you don't need to explain anything. They don't need to understand the contract that they're signing in order to make it real.
Right, like, which is a bit of a question about consent.
Yeah, like.
Well, and I find that, like, while Cabal is not necessarily good at quote-unquote people, like, in counterpoint to his brother, he sure knows how to manipulate the stupid ones. Yeah. You know, like.
He really does, yes.
Like, they just seem
the
to.
The issue is that he thinks everyone he meets is stupid, just about.
Yeah, it's probably half of it.
Yeah. But yes, no, when he wants something, he gets it.
Absolutely.
Really, like, he's very good at just, like, setting those goals and achieving them right away. Like, this is the plan. Okay, plan's done.
Right. So Cabal and Bones continue on and stop off the steam calliope, which the riggers are having trouble getting to work and are having problems with Dennis and Denzel. He sees Denzel armed and fusses over it. Being the good scientist he has surgical gloves handy and takes a good look at the cooked arm that's described as unset blanc mange, which I had to look up because I didn't know what it was, and it's like almost like a creme brulee.
Ew.
Yeah.
Rough.
So he gives Denzel an appointment time, 9:30, to fix his arm. Love that.
I love the insult as well, like what you were saying about, like, the rough insults that are kind of, like, soft. It's like, you were a waste of protein when you were alive, and now you're dead and denying some tree sustenance. Like, how can I want to write, like, I want to write that down and keep that on hand in case I meet somebody who really cheeses me off, you know?
In case you meet, like, someone who's dead?
Yeah. Well, at least, yeah, no, good point. Find a way to use that. You're denying some tree sustenance. Just rough. So Cabal fixes and installs the music roll for the calliope, which in my view shows incredible engineering aptitude. And we saw a little hint of this in the Exuent Demon King, I think, when we were describing, like, the Maw of Clathic.
Yes.
When it was going through all sort of the engineering, the way that things work. Like, here we get another example of sort of that, his natural aptitude for things that just kind of fit together.
Right, and doesn't understand why the other ones can't get it.
Exactly.
I fail to see the difficulty. I trust you memorized all of that.
I feel like I've had managers like that, you know, where they're like, okay, you just do this, 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 this. You got that, right? Sorry, one more time?
So Cabal continues to school the riggers on the use of machine and gets the music started. He didn't know much about music, but he knew what he liked. The clear corollary was that he knew what he didn't like, but this, it turned out, was untrue. The music was a curious piece in waltz time, full of odd cadences and deliberate discords. Cabal watched the bandmaster Antoniman wave its baton in approximate time and leer over its shoulder at once every 21 and a bit bars when he tried to make up his mind. He picked up the tube in which the paper roll had been stored and read the label. Ménage. Par J. Lassery. He put it down again, his mind still uncertain. Now, I did do a little bit of research on this as well and found that piece of music. So I will also do a post on the website. So if you're interested in learning more about this this music,
particular
which
piece?
Yeah, it translates as merry-go-round.
Ah,
yeah,
the ménage.
Ménage, yeah. Well, pardon my terrible French.
I was trying to figure it out because ménage means to clean or to arrange. So I was like, I don't know the word ménage. But then again, whenever I've spoken French, I've never actually had to use the term merry-go-round.
Yeah.
So go figure.
Weird that didn't come up.
I know, right? You know, just walking around the streets of Montreal.
Boring time in Montreal.
Yeah, you don't really talk about merry-go-rounds that often with adults.
Yeah. So a horse comes by in a new outfit from the haberdashery.
Looking fine.
And his threads.
Imperial purple. Like, that was a choice.
Yes. And also berates Cabal for his lack of flair. You certainly don't look the part. Accountant, yes. Carnival proprietor and showman, no. I'd see the haberdashery tomorrow if I were you.
seriously, though, I mean, the carnival's named after the two of you. You should both be presentation level. Come on now.
Right? Step it up, boys. Step it up. Yes. You got a show to run.
A big part of the carnival is the outfits, quite frankly.
Totally. Right. I mean, it's like going to the comic expo without at least wearing some silly hat or something.
Yeah, right? Like there's got to be something.
You got to step up your game. Like, don't just show up with, you know, jeans and tee.
Well, and Johannes doesn't really understand why Horst is like, you should dress like this. And then Horst, with a wicked smile, informs Cabal that there aren't enough barkers and that he will be taking on the House of Medical Monstrosity.
And before we even get to the medical monstrosities, I loved that, yes, admitted Horst, that was the deal. He smiled a smile that Cabal had seen make spiders run for cover. So this to me actually was one of those laugh out loud moments as well, because here we are going back to the experience in the crypt where
spider fights,
you know,
I eat the losers and I eat the winners so they don't get too confident.
Exactly. I was just like, oh my gosh, full circle. Love it. Love it. Love it. Like one of those threads interwoven throughout the book.
There's this myth in like the descendants of Athena. Well, in the Percy Jackson series anyways, because generally it's believed that Athena didn't have kids, but that Athena cursed this woman to become Arachne, so all Athena children are plagued by spiders. Oh. So I like this reversal, where all spiders are plagued by vampires.
Yeah, I got a little bit of fear on that front. So, yes, Horst tells Cabal that they're now... Carnival Sideshow Barkers, and convinces him to fill in for the day.
I like that line too, where Cabal's like, too many barkers, with rare optimism.
We have an overabundance of staff.
Yeah. So it's nice to see him try.
Absolutely. And for tonight only, thrown out of the best universities, excommunicated from all the most popular religions, and many of the obscure ones, fresh from his recent engagement in hell, we present Johannes Cabal, necromancer.
Do-do-do-do!
Yeah, which I think that was such a great historical and, like, experiential summary for Cabal, like, it's, the characterization.
It's a great introduction of a guy.
Right?
Like, I'd love to be announced to a room like that.
I got to work on my elevator pitch. Seriously. This guy's got a few on us here.
Seriously.
But he denies, actually, if we're being kicked out of the universities, that he left of his own free will. Yes, usually in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Not the point, Horst.
Never mind.
This is really funny because, as you know, another host in another podcast is my mother, Maggie. And I like to routinely remind everyone that she was not kicked out of... I like to say that she was kicked out of high school. My mother likes to say that she left high school. And then I like to remind her that she was politely asked never to return to high school. She went to a Catholic school, moved in with her boyfriend.
All right. They did not like that. Lived in sin.
Mm-hmm.
Not so great.
Not so great.
Got it.
So, same.
So, yes, Horst then puts Cabal in charge of the House of Medical Monstrosity, as you were saying, due to Cabal's extensive knowledge. And both think of the creation of Dennis and Denzel. Cabal bridled. That damn test batch was going down the plug hole the instant he managed to develop something better.
Aww.
I love that this is how he talks about Denzel and Dennis. It's just like, oh, that was such a bad batch of reanimations.
They make such a good comedic break from things, though. Just when you're like, you get a little bit too much into it, then he throws these two characters in just to have that moment of silliness.
Yes. I mean, it's the classical theater trick of bringing on the goofballs, you know, like that's the shtick of the Three Stooges. But
and it's not like Cabal didn't know, though. Like, they were Dumb and Dumber before he killed them and reanimated them. Like, he acts like, oh, I'm so unlucky to get stuck with these guys at the start. But it's like, you chose them.
They were the dumbasses who couldn't even, you know, pull off a proper heist, you know?
Literally. Like, I know you were in the middle of nowhere, but you could have waited a week for help to come along later. Like,
absolutely. So, Cabal starts his barker job.
Yes, the favorite part of the chapter, at least mine. See the man with the exposed intestine. See Alicia and Xenia, the two-headed girl. See. He couldn't understand why he had to keep repeating, see.
And then further, he couldn't imagine the average rube wanting to touch, smell, or taste the show's stars. Not the average rube, anyway. I think this is hilarious. Like, marketing is obviously also lost on Cabal. Like, but at the same time, like, not wanting to like, it's such an example of his analytical mind. Like, it's not about the repetition and the motivation or encouragement of people to buy a ticket. That is the see. It's that he juxtaposes that with, well, why would they want to do anything but see them? Like, these are gross people. Like, these are monstrosities. These are.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I envision when I think about, like, the House of Monstrosities, like, I envision walking into, you know, those, like, haunted houses where you've got all those, like, scientific, like, bottles of, like, you know, some sort of alien body baby or something, yeah. Or body parts. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't want to lick anything in that space either. But like, that's Cabal's analysis. Is like, it's not about sort of that selling the tickets and creating the hype. It's more about, well, why on earth would you lick that stuff or anything
it's
else?
Obvious, people,
right? Yeah,
so Cabal is really intelligent and quick to wit when he needs to be. Your face will stick like that if the wind changes. That statement from the mother to the
child.
To the yes. child. And his response to that, like, without a beat, certain surgical techniques would do the trick too.
Right? There are solutions for that.
Total weirdo.
Not to mention that how he insults her without her even knowing. Madam, he said, or may I call you Florid Termagant? Which yes. basically means excessive, violent, and turbulent woman.
Yes, red-faced, harsh-tempered, overbearing. I love that she reacts as if he's flirting.
Yes!
You know, like...
Oh la la!
Oh my!
I'm a married woman!
And this is when the whole thing changes for me, when Cabal decides to put away the notes, and he starts basically freestyling with the truth and blunt... approach that is more typical of him. And funny enough, he's actually a better salesman when he just, you know, mm-hmm. wings it.
Right.
Yeah, he gets quite into the whole, like, behind me is medical monstrosities, mm-hmm. outcasts, torrifying visions. I don't know. Really sells just the gross and the gore.
Absolutely.
Which works. And I think, right. you know, is kind of more of the whole, like, sideshow, you know, true to form
yeah
version of it, you know,
take it right. off script,
yeah,
you know? Well, as he puts it, quite to quote it, an exhibit where all are such drawn together to give you, a normal member of the general public, a chance to jeer and laugh at those less fortunate than you. Just calls it for what straight oh, absolutely.
What it is. Schadenfreude.
Yeah, yes. Slake your thirst for abomination and abnormality, draw self-esteem from their abasement. Like, I thought that was actually a really apt insight, again, into people's interest in the macabre and disfigured. So it's like, he, again, may not be the ultimate people person, like his brother, but he kind of gets it, yeah. you know, on some level, right? Like, he gets what it is that attracts or what people desire, and how that can get kind of dark
yeah.
you know, sometimes.
I was going to say, he follows it up, like, by trying to, like, you know, ask people, like, what is your... disfigurement, or like no problem, like, they'll put you to shame in there, you won't ever feel bad about yourself again, right? And people are like, I have freckles, I have an overbite, I'm blah blah, like,
I'm a ginger, know. Called a teenage boy.
Yes, so you are.
I have to give a side eye to Tans and the ginger at this one.
I howled so hard when I first read that.
She's actually quoted it to me numerous times before this podcast.
I think it's one of my favorite parts of all of the books, to be honest with you.
Yar, har, diddly dee, you are a ginger.
Because it all goes really quickly, too, in it. I have this, I have this, I have this, I have this. And if you're not really paying attention and you're just sort of skimming all of these details, you lose the joke. Yeah, exactly.
So funny. So, yes, there is no cure for being a ginger. We're sorry, Tanzan.
I wouldn't take it anyway.
You're absolutely gorgeous as is.
Aw.
Aw.
So. But despite all of that, he can't sell a ticket.
Exactly.
So he does, though, think of how how to reward people.
To encourage the sales.
Yeah. Yeah. And he thinks of Layla, the luscious, lissome, lightly latex lady.
And this, again, shows to me, it's like a remarkable insight and quick understanding of people and their desires. Like, is this remarkable for Cabal? Like, he gets, or is he just taking the advice of his brother and that's what people like?
I think it's a little bit of the disconnect. Like, he learns quickly. He picks up on things, you know, as they're going, right? But he prefers to sit on them and think about them. Hmm. So I think in this sort of situation, you know, it was very much like he doesn't understand why someone would want Layla the latex lady, but he understands that they do. So he'll sell her off if he can.
Right.
He's like, this doesn't make sense to me, but I know it works anyways. So
right.
Yeah, and he's been described as retaining knowledge very well and easily. So I think he takes all of this information in that he's getting from all the sources. And even though he doesn't really understand it, he can process what he's been told and use that to his advantage.
So I think it's less that he's really understanding, connecting with them on like a personal level, like, yeah, Layla. And he's more just like, y'all want Layla, y'all can have Layla, sure, fine, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and that's the encouragement for the first ticket to the man who's eyeballing the poster.
Ticket master from earlier, yes.
You too could get a photo with the lovely latex Layla. And that's the first sale.
Breaks the damn.
I will.
Well, and to me, like, I love the quote, this year could well turn out to be an interesting experiment into behavioral psychology. And I sort of thought when I read that, I thought, you know, I wonder if that's why I love this book. Because again, it's sort of like, you know, Cabal not having really any sort of emotional intelligence, but at the same time, the quick-wittedness and analysis and ability to sort of piece everything together on demand, essentially.
Yeah. There's another line just following that sentence where he says, like, he doesn't think that his molting man would have turned the trick, which, you know,
well, he turning the trick furniture
makes sense in and of itself in this sentence. But there's another thing, like, when you turn a trick, sort of a thing is like when you capture John or something like that in prostitution. It's almost like, you know, Johannes is literally doing like pimping for the Satan, you know? So it's like he is himself. He not? That's right. So I just like the extra, just like, I will slowly, slowly get there. And he's just putting himself into this position too of being quite the, you know, pimp. Yeah.
What's that other quote? We're all whores under capitalism. In this case, we're all pimps under Satan.
Yes.
Does that apply?
Yes. Cabal finishes his speech and the carnival begins its first night. And so its welcoming smile widened until fangs showed. The carnival began its first night.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love it too. Have you read The Night Circus?
No.
I know people don't like being recommended books, but anyone listening, it's such a good book.
Ooh.
So good.
Is that going to turn into our next podcast series?
It's only one book, but I could talk about it forever anyways. I love that book. So good.
I'll have to check that out.
Totally.
It'd be like a bonus episode for this one.
Right?
We'd have a webpage just based on carnival recommendations.
Yeah. I've got a lot of them. I love carnivals.
That would be a good blog post, actually.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyways.
This concludes our episode 3.4, Come One, Come All. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember, reanimation is trending.